pause and think to yourself, who is my audience? And in this case, let's say it's the CEO or the chief financial officer, whoever it is in leadership that you're talking to or presenting to. And then ask yourself, how are they going to use this information? What do they need to know to do their jobs more effectively? And then provide no more than 3 points. So 1, 2, or 3 main points that are rather top level. But don't forget to provide some specifics. 1 or 2 specifics that will either support your points or perhaps give them that information about your team or that frontline person that's going to provide meaning. It's going to put meaning behind those metrics.
Hello and welcome to the Leadership Launchpad, where we help technical managers improve themselves, their teams, and their organizations. On this show, I talk with industry leaders, coaches, authors, and experts to give you actionable insights that can help improve your own performance and the performance of those around you. Our guest today is Michelle Moreno. Michelle and I met at ATD last year and are both part of the Talent Development Think Tank. She is a communications and storytelling expert who helps people become clear, concise, and compelling in their communications. With Stanford and Forbes Council honors, she ignites communication excellence in organizations with her award-winning coaching, workshops, and keynotes. I find that when most organizations talk about communication, they are talking about downward communication. You know, how to communicate with your team, how to write, you know, better emails from the C-suite. But what about the other direction? Today, I'm really excited to talk with Michelle because we talk about the topic of upward communication and why people find it so difficult. On this episode, you can expect to learn how you can use the pause, edit, talk method to improve all of your communication, why stories are so important for helping people remember your message, how silence can communicate confidence, and so much more. Before we get into the discussion, I do want to remind you that if this is your first time listening to the show, make sure to subscribe so you never miss a future episode. And if you are already subscribed, if you could take just 1 minute to like or rate the show, I would really appreciate it. It really helps us spread our message. And with that, let's get into the discussion with Michelle Moreno. Michelle, welcome to the Leadership Launchpad. How are you doing today?
I'm with you, Matt. I'm doing great.
Okay. I wasn't sure. You said you were with me. I wasn't sure if that was going to mean it was a bad day or a good day. I don't know.
Luckily good. I'm not going to make the host look bad.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. I'm so excited for our topic today. I'm really happy to have you here because it's interesting. So I mentioned as we were getting ready that I might start with a little bit of a story. So let me start there.
Love it.
I was in one of my first leadership development sessions in the corporate world. I did a lot of it in the military, but in the corporate world, I'll never forget where they were talking about giving feedback and the different ways that you could give feedback. And this individual in this training, this facilitator said, don't give upward feedback. That was kind of his take, in that giving upward feedback was simply too dangerous. You never knew who you were going to talk to. And Grant, you know, maybe he didn't fully believe that, you know, because it depends on the relationship. But the takeaway was just don't worry about giving upward feedback. And I, you know, sitting there as a manager, think, well, that sounds terrifying because how am I supposed to ever get better or do anything better if people aren't telling me anything? Mm-hmm. But I think that is indicative of what often happens in companies, mm-hmm. where when we talk about feedback, when we talk about communication in general, it's framed as downward. We think about how are we sending information from the top down, and we don't spend a lot of time thinking about the other way that I would guess both of us believe is just as important, is you know, communication going up, right? Like, you focus on this idea of upward feedback. I guess, how did you get to that point? Like, how did this become your focus, this upward communication?
Because as a communication coach, and I primarily coach and do workshops on things like public speaking, persuasion and influence presentations. Yeah. But a lot of people were coming to me with a challenge of having become new leaders who now have to give presentations to leadership, to the C-suite, sometimes the CEO. Not only is this nerve-wracking and makes you ramble, but they also just didn't know exactly what that type of person was looking for. Now, I don't often recommend giving feedback per se to higher-ups, especially in those positions, only because your job in those moments in that forum is to do something very specific.
Yeah.
However, in an ideal world, wouldn't we all want to have companies that are so psychologically safe and that so honor ideas from every corner that everyone would feel comfortable giving feedback to whoever at whatever level? Wouldn't that be the ideal? And we all know, and we all know that is the ideal because it actually does have a huge return on investment if everyone feels free to offer their ideas.
Right.
And as you know, in the military, probably if people don't speak up, there can be super negative consequences.
Oh yeah. There's whole, you know, courses on, like in the cockpit, since we have, you know, three or four people in a cockpit at a time of how do you create situations where everybody feels comfortable. So everybody can speak up. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned a lot of people were coming to you, you're coaching people on, you know, public speaking and other forms of communication. And what were, can you dive a little bit deeper into some of the challenges that people were coming to you with of why is it difficult to be ready to speak to the CEO? Like what were the challenges that people were having?
For example, one of the first things is there is a perceived risk. The person you're speaking to has such immense power. It's like talking to a saber-toothed tiger in prehistoric times.
I like that.
And for example, in this podcast right now, I'm a little bit nervous. And the reason is there's so many eyes on me that I can't even see. It's such a high visibility scenario. And there are so many people able to judge me. I can't even see who's judging me. So you sort of feel like a prehistoric cave woman on the savannah who has been separated from her pack. And now the saber-toothed tiger can see me. And I'm So there's that first perceived risk. You know, your job is on the line because this person has so much power.
Yeah.
The second challenge they have is that they're so used to downward communication, training their teams in processes, that they provide too much context, too much step-by-step, too many details. Sometimes these are engineers who had to offer detailed analysis. But really what the upward communication requires is that you get very top level with main points and a key message and then provides a few significant details.
Yeah. Yeah.
So a lot of times people either they go so top level that they just say, you know, three sentences and they don't provide any valuable information and they might as well have just handed that CEO a PDF
with
three bullet points on it. I mean, tell me something I don't know, right? Or they go the other direction where they offer so much and they feel like they have to prove themselves and show everything and show how much work they've been doing and that they're working so hard when you only have to show what is going to put your key message forward, what is going to show that you're doing your job and how all that connects to the team initiatives and ultimately the company goals.
That point about trying to prove yourself is such a big one. I remember there was somebody that I used to follow a bit on social media, a guy named Dave Hollis, who was he used to be the VP of, I think it was marketing at Disney. And he kind of he would often talk about how he was in this really weird chain of events where he got a job and then like the person above him retired and then the person above him moved and the person above him did something. And so it was just like, he just like went up the ladder crazy quickly.
Upward.
he just fell upward. And all of a sudden he found himself in this high level role and wasn't quite sure if he fully deserved it. And so he would fall into the exact trap, even, you know, kind of as an executive, he would fall into that exact trap of in meetings, he would just talk, because he was trying to prove that he was supposed to be there. And it wasn't until somebody pulled him aside and they said like, hey, look, like, we know you're supposed, like, you're here because you're supposed to be here. Just shut up. Like, stop trying to prove yourself. But on this idea of, you know, struggling to communicate upward, a couple months ago, we had an episode with Lapora Lindsay, where we talked about how so many companies have kind of a break in understanding, where at some level, all of a sudden, the leaders above, like, don't really know what's happening at the ground level. Is this inability to communicate upward kind of part of the cause of that? Is that one of the outcomes? If people don't feel comfortable communicating upward, is that ultimately, you know, what are some of the challenges that organizations face when individual managers can't communicate upward?
That does happen. There is that break. And if the mid-level is passing messages upward, let's say, and then that director or VP just doesn't get the message up because they're so concerned either about their own position or providing ROI evidence or showing how well they're spending their capital, and they forget the concerns of those underneath, all that information gets lost. Because the CEO can't meet with everybody on the front line. They can't meet with all the frontline managers. And it's that responsibility of that funnel to move upward. But that person who's stuck in the middle or just below the CEO level has pressure. They have their own agenda. Sometimes they don't even talk about what their own team has done, much less somebody, let's say, one or two levels below. All that frontline information gets lost. And that's why so many leadership programs talk about the best companies having those CEOs or that C-suite that sits on the front line, that talks to the front line.
Yeah.
Because eventually the funnel just gets skinnier and skinnier until very little information flows.
But I think that the fact that there is so little information that flows up that way, or how it gets narrower and narrower, I think that is why it's so important for leaders at every level to think about how to do this better, right? Think about how can I pass information upward in a more effective way? Because I think what often happens is we just complain like, oh, leadership doesn't get it. It's like, well, what are you doing that could help that? Are you passing on information in the most effective way possible so that they do understand what's happening? I know you have kind of you have some techniques that you work people through. So people come to you. I guess let's start there. People come to you, they say, I struggle with, you know, communicating upward, passing on the right information. What are the first things that you do to kind of like diagnose the problem? Or what are some of the first steps that you usually take with someone?
The first thing I do is a technique called PET, pause, edit, talk. And this technique works no matter what level you're talking to. Pause and think to yourself, who is my audience? And in this case, let's say it's the CEO or the chief financial officer, whoever it is in leadership that you're talking to or presenting to. And then ask yourself, how are they going to use this information? What do they need to know to do their jobs more effectively? And then provide no more than 3 points. So 1, 2, or 3 main points that are rather top level.
Yep.
But don't forget to provide some specifics. 1 or 2 specifics that will either support your points.
Yeah.
Or perhaps give them that information about your team or that frontline person that's going to provide meaning.
Yeah.
Meaning behind those metrics, because that is what will grab people's attention, that human element, and make you more memorable.
Make
it seem like you care, make it seem like you're proud. Yeah. I think a lot of people just shy away from that. But I really, really recommend that, pausing before you speak to think of those most important points. What's going to add value here? What does this person need to do their job?
It reminds me, I forget the exact statistics, but there are studies out there about memorizing statistics versus, or remembering statistics versus remembering stories, and how the human brain is just, it's just so much easier for us to hold on to stories. And so that makes sense about, you know, first it's about pausing to figure out how are they going to use this information? What are the key points that are going to come into play or that they're going to care about? But then when you think about those key points, don't just think about them from the point of view of the numbers, but think about from the point of view of kind of like the people, the story behind it. Am I getting that right?
And yes, you are. And of course, as the higher up you go, the more important data, metrics, return on investment.
Yes.
Those things become more and more important to the point that any presentation at that level is going to require that you have the graphs and the numbers and the metrics and the evidence to prove that what you're saying is true. Why? Because people at the top only got there because they don't make decisions emotionally.
Yeah.
They make decisions based on proof, evidence, data. Yeah. But once you've provided the most important data, not all the data, just one or two cherry-picked data points, metrics, or numbers that will prove your points, then you bring in the human element once you've satisfied that. To make it memorable, because people will remember stories more than they'll remember metrics. And usually you've prepared some type of PDF or one sheet that gives the numbers or the data or the graph anyway at that level, right?
Yeah.
So you don't have to worry about that. They're going to take that away. But are they going to know about the frontline manager who stopped production, upset the customer, but then it turned out the customer gave them an award because they provided so much safety and saved injuries on the job, right?
Yeah.
How would the CEO know that story? Unless you said, hey, you know, we empowered him to make that decision. He had not only the decision-making skill, but the confidence to make that decision. And even though the client was upset at first, they ended up giving him an award with a photo.
Yeah, yeah.
Now that CEO will remember that.
Yeah, I like that. On that note, one thing that you said there was, you know, having some kind of takeaway or something they're going to walk away with. How do you, does this ever come up of trying to figure out what to put in the presentation versus what to just include in other notes? You know, because I think that happens a lot with, especially, you know, engineering managers and people who, like you said, have a lot of data. It's like, well, but I got 15 charts here that I need to walk through. How do people make that decision of what they actually need to go through in person versus what can kind of wait till later or be in like ancillary materials?
The tendency is to put too much information into your slide deck.
Yeah. Yeah.
I always recommend if you feel the need to have it at the ready, then put just the most important top level points in, let's say, 10 slides for a 15-minute presentation.
Yeah.
And then the details, in case you get asked, you have them available as slides so that you can quickly scroll through and say, we did those numbers, and then you can present it and or put it into a PDF or handout that you give to the leadership.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do a good job of understanding what are the sort of top 10 slides, no more than 12, no more than 15, that are really going to show what I need to show, that are going to tell the story, that are going to prove and that I'm doing a great job, that gives the proper updates that these people need to do their job. And then everything else, if somebody comes to you and says, but we need to provide this and this, or we need to show, have it ready.
Yeah.
Or reference it in the talk and say, we have that detailed in the PDF.
I like that. It's kind of, you know, it's kind of just as you're going through asking yourself, because I think the assumption is like, well, what if they ask me about this? Or what if they question this number? And that's what then leads to just more and more and more and more slides. And so pushing that down, I think, is good. Are we already in kind of the edit process as we're talking now? Or is that like a whole nother thing?
What do you mean?
Just in terms of like the pause, edit, talk, like are we kind of, when we think about starting off pausing and thinking about what they want, coming up with their, with all of our slides, what's that second step of editing the message that we're sending? Is that how we're going through this process of trimming down and figuring out what's presented versus what's additional material? Or is there, or does edit mean like something else in this context?
Well, pause, edit, talk applies to verbal conversations.
Okay. Okay. Got it.
So for example, you just asked me a question. I would pause and I would think, who is this audience? What do they need to know? What am I going to say about pause, edit, talk here? And then I would speak. So it would take me at least 3-4 seconds to come up with a good answer.
Got it.
And that pause, edit, talk is before you speak. Continually.
Each question, you
pause.
Interesting.
Or if you have to present a lot of information, pause, breathe, you know, especially if you're nervous and say, what's my first point? Maybe you've already got your bullets, but now you know what your first point is. You think, how am I going to start this? What are my top 3 points about this? And then you speak. So PET is constant. It's on the fly speaking. And it is a tool that has helped so many people, at least that who I've worked with, to be clear, to be concise, and to be meaningful when they speak.
Well, I have a whole bunch of other questions then. The first off being, in this idea of pausing in real time, you know, like, so we're sitting here talking, having that pause, I'm guessing... you can tell me whether or not people that you work with suffer from this. I know I do. I freak out about the idea of not having an immediate answer. I feel like as soon as a question is asked, like the moment after their mouth starts moving, my mouth needs to start moving or else I'm signaling that I don't know, you know, I'm worried about waiting too long. Is that a concern that people have? And if it is, even if it's not, how do I get over that?
Yes, people have a need, I don't know if it's subconscious, instinctual, or culturally learned, to fill the space. Interestingly enough, the higher up that you go in an organization, the more space and silence a leader is likely to allow in a room.
Interesting.
The higher the confidence level,
the
more silence, the greater pausing people will allow in the room. Now, that may not be the case if culturally in an organization, people talk over one another. That's a very bad habit. And people feel like they have to talk in order to hold their space.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, the reason that we have filler words such as, so, and like, the reason we have quote unquote filler words is because we're filling the space, because we feel like we need to fill the space to seem like competent speakers, to buy time to gather our thoughts. And that's where the genesis of filler words is. So instead, try to think of yourself as, the more space I allow, the more pausing I do, the more confidence I project, and the more I seem like a leader.
Yeah.
Perhaps to maybe switch yourself out of that mode.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. And I 100% agree with you, thinking back on kind of my experience and then anecdotally, like what I've heard from other places. Like I always hear Bill Gates famously was always the quiet one. He would always just be like, if you were at a big event, you wouldn't know he was there. He's just always listening. And then it's like he utters a sentence and it's groundbreaking or something. You know? if you are in a situation where there is a little bit of that fighting for space, or people don't feel like culturally it's accepted to kind of take that pause, do you have techniques to help people? Like, whether that's, I don't know, I'm kind of searching here of like imagining, you know, sending the not feeling like you need to have the response then, but sending the follow-up email or things like that. Or are there ways that people can still be effective or be more effective and take this and follow these guidances when they're maybe in a culture that still is all, you know, fighting for attention?
In general, for those types of situations, I often coach people to listen and synthesize information and to only speak when they have real value to contribute. Either an idea that has not been mentioned, or synthesizing everything that's been said and offering a summary, and to speak up within that meeting, because you don't want to be the one seen as so passive that, or that you're sending it afterward, or that you are always doing that. You want to break the pattern. You don't want to fall into patterns. To do that a few times here and there, sure, no problem. Send a follow-up. Thought about this. But you don't want to be known as that person, because you want to have that confidence. So make sure what you're saying, focus on the content instead of on yourself. Focus on, is this something valuable? Is this something that hasn't been mentioned? Is this something that puts what's been said in this meeting into context? Is this something that synthesizes or summarizes what we've discussed to make everything clear for everybody else? If you have that as your bar, once you speak, it will be so valuable that you will be seen as somebody who is either a great communicator, a great leader, or just people will stop and listen, and you'll get better and better at it. After which time, the second you do speak, people might be more inclined to stop talking and listen.
Yeah. Yeah. So be known as somebody that maybe speaks less, but it's good. It's valuable thought. It's valuable speech versus somebody who's just talking all the time. And I definitely think you're right. In, again, going back to my experience, like, leaders know, like, top leaders can filter that out. You know, that they understand the people who, which is really, can be really frustrating when you're the person down farther in the organization, frontline manager, mid-level manager, where you're all fighting for position and fighting to see who can say more. You can feel like the other people around you are maybe getting more mind share because they're talking more and they're talking over everybody. But at least in the couple times where I've been able to, for various reasons, get the viewpoint from the people above, they can tell.
Everybody can tell.
Yeah.
There's always that person who rambles, takes up a lot of air, who has a reputation. And when communication is a chance to raise your reputation.
Yeah.
Or sink it.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm always harping on people to pause and really try to deliver that value. Value meaning something that's meaningful, relevant, or useful. Mm-hmm. Information people can use to do their jobs. Something that's meaningful that gives it that aw factor, or yeah, we're going to go out there and get them. Yeah, something emotional, right? Yeah. Which is also provides a lot to a room. It can raise energy. It can inspire people. Yeah. Or, you know, something, again, that is just useful or relevant to the conversation.
Yeah. You're making me think a lot about social media. And, you know, I'm on LinkedIn all the time, and I'm thinking about how to, you know, get more reach on LinkedIn, or people are asking me how to be more effective on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. And so much of it really does always come back to provide value. Like, don't speak to speak. Don't post to post. You should be providing value in your conversations with people. And so it's interesting that kind of flows kind of through every form of communication. The way to be more effective is to be pausing and thinking about that value and really delivering good value to people.
And on LinkedIn, there's a few things that you have to consider, such as what is my personal brand and what is my message, so that you're on brand and you stick with those values or stick with what you're known for. But also on LinkedIn, we, and any social media, be it a YouTube title or any platform, you want that opening hook. So that one line that stands apart where you put white space underneath it so that all they see is that above the fold question, or, you know, it can be a provocative question. Do you have a teenage daughter who's going on spring break? Read this or look out, or something, or, you know, in business.
Oh goodness.
You know, in business, it might be, are you ruining your reputation when you speak? And the person says, am I? And they feel like they have to read what's in there to find out. Yeah. Right. So it could be a provocative question. It could be a surprising statistic. It can be so many different ways to provide an opening hook. But that's the difference between just a regular conversation where you're really captive if it's one-on-one. Somebody's not going to get up and walk away from you in the middle of the conversation. That doesn't happen.
Hopefully.
But on social media, they sure will.
Yeah, exactly. So this idea of upward communication, we've covered a lot of ground. So we started off with this idea of pause, edit, talk, which I think is an excellent way, kind of any in any engagement where you're talking with somebody, but especially when you're going upward, of waiting a second, thinking about what the other person needs, how they're going to use this information, editing then the message that you're going to say, and then talking. When it comes to the presentation, keeping it kind of as trim and slim as possible, having key points, just a couple key points, backing those key points up with like human stories, if you will, to like really secure it and, you know, capture people's attention and make them remember.
And relevant data points, because that's very important.
Yeah, exactly. And then relevant data points, which you can kind of split between what you put up front, like how you have up front, and then maybe the backing or the reasoning of how you came to those data points, you can put down below. So it's prepared and ready to go, but you're not trying to sort through 50 slides or whatever.
Right, in 15 minutes.
Exactly. Exactly. Awesome. I think there's any other last minute tips, what, you know, for people who are worried about how to communicate upward, any other last parting tips?
Well, I think that one of the things that leadership wants is they want to see that you're on track to meet the team goals, the department goals, the company goals, and that really they have confidence that wherever you put your resources, it's money, time, et cetera, that's well spent. So you always want to look to provide that return on investment, that evidence, those that data, those metrics that show all the things that you suggest that they do actually get a return. So that's super important. And I am not that good at that. I will say that is my weak spot. Big time, because I've never been a data person or a number cruncher. But for some people, that's their favorite part. And they have so much data that they have to actually cherry pick and learn how to limit the amount of evidence that they provide. Just a few, like, decide what is my key message here today that I want to impart to this CEO, and what data points will I cherry pick to prove it?
Yeah.
And also to get over this idea that you don't like politics or selling your vision or asking for, you know, support. This is your job, and this is what leadership wants you to do, because they can't be everywhere, everything, all at once.
Yeah.
They can't. So they rely on you. So don't make it feel like this is politics.
Yeah.
It's not politics. It's being the eyes and ears for all that happens from the ground up, so that all the greatness of everyone who you're in charge with shines through, so that all the resources, capital, etc., flows down, so they're prepared, and that you're this conduit. Don't make it about yourself, and that you have to be an influencer or a seller. And just make it about that you're the really that key, that conduit for that upward and downward flow.
I love that as a great way to reframe it of, you know, because I think you're right. A lot of people get hung up on this idea of politics, and it is still a marketplace of ideas, you know, like, and if the ideas aren't there, they're not a part of the marketplace. But then more than that is it's, you're not supporting yourself. You're supporting your team. You're that conduit, as you say, to make sure the people above understand and celebrate what your people are doing. And I like that. That's just a reframe that can be really important, probably helpful for a lot of people.
And to provide, always provide that data and ROI, but yeah, throw in that story that makes it human and that, yeah, like you said, celebrates.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your team.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Well, I think those are some really helpful points for folks. I know it's something that, you know, thinking about it back, this is the thing I struggled the most with when I was first started in the corporate world, is really taking the time to understand what my bosses cared about and communicating to that point versus mm-hmm. trying to like convince them of whatever I thought was important. Just very, very different things. So this is definitely something that I've struggled with, which is why I appreciate having this conversation with you. And I'm certain a lot of people took a number of key points from this. If people, you know, you say, so you coach on this and kind of a lot of things communication related, how can people kind of find you and get in touch with you?
My website is michellemoreno.co, and Michelle has one L. So michellemoreno.co.
Excellent. Perfect. Well, we'll make sure to link that in the show notes. So if you listening are struggling with these challenges, you became a new manager, you're all nervous about what to share, you feel like you're just kind of, you know, talking too long, or you're struggling to get the leadership above you to listen, give Michelle a call. She can help you out, help you work through that. Michelle, thank you so much for being here today on the Leadership Launchpad. This has been great.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you so much for listening to today's show. If you are looking for help turning your organization's great engineers into great managers, me and my team at Better Everyday Studios would love to help. We deliver targeted and interactive training workshops that are designed to help build the three fundamental skills of any new manager: building trust, giving feedback, and setting goals. Reach out to me through matt@bettereverydaystudios.com so we can start making your organization better every day.